Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
To the sweet sounds of Kevin Bloody Wilson, it's part two of Hump Day with Swanee and friends, Samantha Richards, Dane Swan. Hello. And just like Kevin Bloody Wilson and Samantha, another proud Western Australian has joined us, Damien Oliver. Hello,
welcome.
Ollie.
Thank you.
Thanks for having.
You got to lean closer to the mic. So okay. That's it. Yeah. I know you.
Western Australian, you been back there lately?
Boy.
Not likely. won't be near future either, actually, but I've probably been to I've been living in Melbourne longer than I probably lived in Perth, so. But I think as most West Australians, you never quite lose that tag.
No. You don't really want to, do you? Because it's got such beautiful lifestyle and beaches and all those the nice things that you want to go home for.
You're also Western Australian, aren't you, Samantha?
Yes.
It is a nice place, but it's a long way from anywhere. That's the only
thing. It really is.
It's kind of there, you're stuck there.
And I think the borders have made that worse, haven't they? They've really divided.
I think so, yeah, yeah. It's like an island now, isn't it? Mm. Here it's the most isolated city in the world. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what family got back there that you haven't been able to keep in touch with?
My mum's the close one, and I'm the only sibling left. Yep. So all my immediate family, I'm married with three kids here.
Yep.
And all my other family's in the West, pretty much. Yeah.
And how what's, because we don't talk racing here, Ollie. I do, but not on this show. What's it been like going through COVID in one of the few jobs that has kept going?
Yeah.
Not a lot has changed for us, particularly probably me as an older person now. You know, I'm 49, so a lot for the younger generation of, in the racing people, because they've been working but actually haven't been able to go out or do anything else.
Just house parties.
Yeah, apparently Airbnbs, yeah.
There it is.
glad I was out of that loop. but yeah, for me, I don't go out as much these days, obviously. But obviously, the younger generation are probably feeling a little bit. But I kind of feel weird because I know a lot of people outside the racing loop that haven't been able to work and do things. But for us, we've been working pretty much nonstop for whatever it is, 18 months, 2 years. Yeah. So I kind of feel like a holiday, whereas everyone else sort of wanting to go back to work. So it's kind of been weird, but. You know, I think we feel lucky that we've been able to work and still been able to have an income as well. But and I think it's probably provided a lot of people with entertainment and been able to have a punt over a long period of time. And I mean, also it's been we understand it's been really important from a work and an income perspective, but also for the horses' welfare as well, because obviously horses like to be worked and creatures of habit and routine. So regardless of whether we could race or not, or whether people think it was safe or not, I think it's been really important for, you know, it's a big employer, keeping a lot of people employed and keeping the horses working in routine as well. So I think it's been really important from that perspective.
And what's it taught you? Because normally during pre-COVID, come April, March, you'd be in Sydney, May, you'd be at Adelaide and Queensland, and then, you know, you'd probably go back home to Perth over the summer, but you've been based here. Have you adjusted your own sort of way of going about things?
Yeah, I kind of get a bit sick of travelling. Yeah. You know, I think I've been doing it for 30-odd years now, so I don't mind being at home. The only thing I'd have missed is going on a holiday somewhere, but I think it's pretty much from March to June, nearly every Saturday you can be riding interstate, so over that period of time you can get a bit worn out sort of travelling and losing weight and that kind of thing, so it's been nice to stay home. But at the same time, probably deprived a little bit of going to ride in those Sydney carnivals and that a little bit as well.
To use Dane's Dane's term, that the juice is worth the squeeze when you go up to those big prize money races.
Yeah. If you do get a win, for sure, that Sydney prize money is pretty big these days. Yeah,
absolutely. So, and Dane, so he goes in a state and he looks after himself and comes back in one piece.
Mm. Yeah, well, Sydney. Yeah, won't be going back to Sydney in a hurry. No, Sydney's off my radar for the next foreseeable future.
So pre this, you, as in once we started, you wanted to know what we'd do, we'd just talk shit. So last week, Dane came up with something that reminded me it'd be good to get you on. So Dane, you haven't sold this full story for a couple of pods, so as in a couple of years. Tell the full story, because Damien's got the opposite. You said you had the chance to meet the Queen and you knocked it back. And that's when I thought, I must get Ollie. So just,
I knocked the chance. So what? I'll assume maybe it's not the case anymore, but after you win, when I won the Brownlow in 2011, I got a letter sent home to me. It was, it was a big fancy letter. And it was like in all calligraphy or whatever you want to, all the fancy writing, a bit different to my handwriting, but it was just pretty much, we'd love for you to meet the Queen. And whenever, she must have travelled, I don't even know if she travels anymore, but she must come out here once a year or whatever it was. Would you like to come and meet her? And I had just zero interest in meeting the Queen. So I knocked it back. My nan nearly fell off her chair when I said that. She's obviously do you call them? A royalist? I don't know what, like a...
That'll do.
Yeah, a royalist or whatever. So she loved them and, my mum and stuff. But nan nearly fell off the couch when I said I had the opportunity to meet the Queen and knocked it back. But, I just...
Do you think you two would have anything to chat about, Dane? Do you reckon she'd come on this podcast?
Well, I knocked her back once, so I doubt she'd...
she'd probably knock you back.
Accept the invitation, yeah. So, I just had no interest in meeting the Queen. I don't know. Do you?
Well, no, but I'm not the type who wants to meet a celebrity. I'd like to talk to them, but not if it's just all high and do the meet and greet. Yeah, No.
Yeah, I'd like to go to afternoon tea.
High tea.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Damien, how did you meet the Queen?
Not too dissimilar to Dane's story, actually. I got a nice letter in the fancy writing.
Sorry, buddy, but Sam said, did you win the Brownlow? How many, 11 Scobie Breezy?
No Brownlow, but
that's the equivalent.
So, I got a letter to go and have lunch with her at Parliament House, I think it was. And
She's a horse fan, yeah?
Loves the horses, yeah. She owns quite a few horses. She is a keen horse rider in her day. The whole family is, I think. And so I thought, I was a bit like you. I thought someone was taking the piss at first. But I thought, this looks pretty fancy. Looks like the real thing. I thought, well, might as well. You're not every day you go and meet the Queen. So I'm driving into Parliament House there and seeing some corgis on the side of the road. So I'm thinking, oh, this is on. And so I go there. I'm in what they call the drawing room where we're waiting to meet the Queen. And they hand us out the form guide, so to speak, who we're sitting with. And it says, we've got, there was Cathy Freeman, a young lady from the Australian Ballet. There was the Governor, the Lord Mayor, the Premier. And they're all sitting on my table. I couldn't believe it. And Her Majesty the Queen as well. I've drawn barrier one. So I go in there and we shake her hand as we walk in and we're told all protocol and we're all sitting around the table and we're all sitting on a table a little bit like this and no one's saying nothing. And I'm thinking, oh, I've got to break the ice here. So I said to, excuse me, Your Majesty, I'm going over to the UK to ride this year at Royal Ascot. Is there any chance you might have a ride for me? And she was a bit thrown aback, but she said, oh, that's wonderful. I don't know if I've got one fast enough for you, but I'll see what I can do. But with that, broke the ice and we got talking about, who I was going over to ride for. And she got talking quite a bit about racing. And it was quite enlightening, I might say. Yeah.
Did you meet her again at Royal Ascot?
I did, actually, yeah. It was a few months later. I was over at Royal Ascot riding. And
she get you a ride?
not quite. She did have a runner on the day and she didn't put me on it, but I had a ride at the meeting and in the Ascot Gold Cup, and this was the old Ascot racecourse. We actually used to walk through the crowd to get to the mounting yard. This beautiful old mounting yard with the old trees and that. And she was in the mounting yard there, and I was going to meet the connections of the owners and trainers of my horse, and I thought, nah, bugger it, I'm going to go and say g'day. So I made a beeline over to go and say hello and, people couldn't believe that I was so forward and going to say g'day to her, but they didn't know that we're old mates. So,
did she recognise you?
She did. She actually said, how are you going? Are you enjoying your stay and all that? We had a chat for a couple of minutes, yeah.
So there's a great line in racing that everyone's equal on the track and under the track. Not just the Queen, but some of the famous people you've met along the journey, because, you know, ultimately if people have got a bit of wealth and they can buy into a horse, they you will be the man to speak to on the way through.
Yeah, well, that's true. You say, you know, you get all sorts on the track. You know, you get your mug punters, you get your, you know, your royals, your shakes and all that sort of, and there's everything in between. So, you know, it's all different types on the track, that's for sure.
Who's some of the favourites that you've met along the way, or some of the ones that you go, why am I here?
Yeah, well, usually, you know, you might get the odd, what do you call, not a, it's a little bit under the influence, had a few drinks.
Yes.
And you get a lot of... you get a lot of advice, you might say, really? Getting on the horse, yeah. And in, you know, in the end, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, if you've got, and some of these can be, as you said, really well-to-do businessmen or not so well-to-do people.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, I mean, it's like telling Dane how to try and kick a footy, you know. And I said, well, sometimes I might just hand him the whip or the skull cap. I said, well, do you want to actually ride the horse, you know?
So, but the one difference here, Swatty, and chime in here, because you probably got some advice from Coterians over the journey, is that you actually don't have to be nice to them. Because as long as you get the kick.
Yeah, well, then I'll pay my way.
Yeah. Whereas,
but,
and
the thing but we get the advice live. So I imagine when Damien's on the horse, you can't hear. You can hear the roar, but you can't hear the peanut in the front row telling you, like, you're fat or you got shit tattoos or... I don't want to swear on the podcast, but that's not what I'm about, but...
Sorry?
It's a joke. So we get advice in real time.
Yeah.
Over the fence, which is great. We also got some positive feedback over the fence, but... that's what makes, I guess, sport great, but you obviously can drown the bad stuff out.
I'm gathering no one's ever told you anything when you were getting on the horse that you've gone, oh, fuck, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I didn't think of that.
Pretty rarely. Yeah.
Very unlikely.
Yeah.
But where I was going with that is that you actually still have to, in business terms, called networking, of course, but these owners, you do have to play the game, I suppose, a bit, because they're the ones who can decide whether you get another ride in a good race.
Yeah, for sure. I think these days with your, you know, your pre-race, well, that's one thing with COVID. We haven't had the owners on track, so to speak. So, yeah.
And you've still managed to ride winners.
That's been a delight.
Do you prefer that?
Yeah.
So you don't choose the horses that you want to ride. They approach you. Is that the way that it works?
A bit of both. Yeah, I have an agent who works closely with the trainers and sometimes the owners. And, you know, you ride track work in the morning to kind of get your rides as well. But the more rides you're winning, the more rides you tend to get, that kind of.
Yeah.
It's like a really popularity kind of thing, you know.
Right.
But, where was I?
As far as networking and...
Having the owners there. And, I mean, it's good to give good feedback as well. You take a little bit on board of what the trainer might say about the horse. But generally, if you're a jockey that knows what you're doing, you're riding against the jockeys and horses all the time, so you get a fair idea what you want to do. But some trainers might have more control of how you want to ride the horse, whereas some trainers like to back the jockey's judgment more often than not.
So do you want to say a lot about instructions or do you want me to say it?
You say it, mate.
The best jockeys don't need instructions and the worst jockeys can't follow them. So, is that right? Got that close enough?
That's about right, yep.
So, mate, how'd you... Your spring was unbelievable and you're still doing it. And I know you're not a rear-view mirror guy, but how have you been able to adjust your body over the years to be able to tear a new one out of the Derby Day again at, what'd you say, 49?
Yeah, look, you still got to get on the right horses. That's the most important thing. If you're not, I can't win on slow horses, but you got to execute on the day. And, you know, I suppose after doing it for 30-odd years, experience in that big occasion over a long period of time, you know how to put yourself in the right position to do that and then... I suppose hold your nerve on the big occasion as well and execute the best result on the day. So you don't always get it right, but, you know, you like to think over a period of time you get it right more than you get it wrong. So we had a few narrow wins there on Cup Week, and it's good when you get the close ones go your way.
God bless you. Yeah. So, but I actually looked through your stats leading into the spring, and so part one we're talking about pre-season training and Swanee's approach to pre-season training compared to a Scott Pendlebury. But as a rider, is it more about trying to angle yourself to say, well, how am I going to get onto these best horses along the way? And obviously you've got a good association now with Godolphin. For those who don't follow, that's James Cummings and a major worldwide operation as well. So I suppose having that type of backing is going to help you as well.
Yeah, for sure. Like our pre-season, I kind of think starts in July, August, so to speak, for, you know, October, November for the spring. So I like to have a little bit of a break in July, and it's only a short break, might be a couple of weeks just to break up the winter, and then I start working back, you know, from early, mid-July, working through the winter, getting your weight getting fit, as you said, angling, trying to get on some nice horses, but showing everyone you're working hard as well, that you're, you know, putting yourself in a good position to set yourself up for the spring carnival. And then you want to be riding winners, riding regularly, probably not getting suspended, those sort of things, and it's sort of hitting form at the right time. So you're getting on those right horses at the right time, and it's been great for me in the twilight of my career teaming up with Godolphin. Now that's probably helped. COVID once again has probably helped a little bit there. You know, whether it be, you know, a few top jockeys were taken out with the Mornington Airbnb situation, that opened up a few doors for a lot of people. Also, riding for Godolphin, James Cummings probably has been stuck in Sydney. So Reg Fleming, who is his stable foreman down here in Melbourne, he's been a good ally. I rode for him over a long period of times with Bart as well. And
so for those who don't know, Reg was Bart's foreman in Melbourne for 25 years, so he's probably as good a Melbourne trainer as there's ever been.
Yeah, they got great systems in place. Yeah. But also, I think they appreciate having a senior jockey, so to speak, riding the horses and giving them really good feedback. And James, I think, being stuck in Sydney, appreciated that as well. And and me knowing the routine of Melbourne Carnival and the races and the type of horses that might suit going where, I think was an important part of the team as well. So it sort of suited all of us as well.
How do you compare the dancing background to you that you've got compared to jockeys as athletes?
Well, this is the thing that similar in a sense that it's such a, your weight is such a huge, I guess, it's a really important part of what you do. I could never, I come from a dancing performing arts background, but I could never become a ballerina, no matter how much I wanted it. I've got one left leg, my left leg's slightly longer than the other, but they measure you as a teenage child. They measure your, you know, your bone structure, the way your feet sit, everything. And then from that point onwards, you have to be so strict with what you put in your body. And so even if you had the biggest love to become a ballerina, I could never become a ballerina. Not a professional one anyway. I just don't have the right body shape or type for it. Is it similar with becoming a jockey? Like, I also grew up riding horses, but I didn't think I could become a jockey either. If you had the love to race horses, but you didn't have the right, I guess, body structure, how important is what you put in your body and what you do? Like, can anyone ride, or is it something that you have to be made for?
Yeah, look, anyone can ride. To be a jockey, they're a little bit stricter on who they allow to become an apprentice jockey now. I think that the intake is roughly 6 to 8 a year they take, and more so girls than boys these days. I think if you go to the pony clubs, I'd say 90% of the kids at pony clubs are girls, and the boys seem to be just getting bigger, or whether that's it, the interest of boys in actually riding horses as well. You know, it's great to see a lot of girls riding, but I actually fear for that there's going to be a lack of boys in the future, you know, when we look 10, 20 years down the track.
What's made that change?
I think size is a bit to do with it, and whether it's cool for boys to ride horses, I don't know. The other thing is just the connection between boys and riding horses. I think out in the country these days, they don't seem to ride horses as much unless they're actually connected to it through a family, whereas a jockey's son or a trainer's son or something like that. But to answer your question, no, the body type is a little stricter, but it's not, obviously, they won't put a line through you, but you obviously got to be pretty small. I think if they do the body measurements now, if you're likely to be a bit, you know, more than that sort of 55 plus sort of kilos when you're mature. They're probably gonna. It's more difficult to become a jockey now for sure.
And then you're talking about how you're between March and June. You're always travelling. You've got to watch what you're eating there. It must be so far. It's been lifelong for you. It must be quite taxing to be constantly aware of what you're eating and you know what you're putting in your body.
Yeah, I kind of put my. You get to know your body over a period of time. How much you can, what you can do, what you can eat and drink, and you know when you can let yourself go and when you have to be strict. I think you have to have a little bit of balance. I kind of have a 5-2 sort of setup. It's a bit different. I sort of watch my weight for 5 days and then I have my 1 or 2 days of relaxing and joy because I think you have to have that. Some do it different, but I think it's really important to have a bit of balance and to have a little let down every now and again and reward yourself as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're obviously still riding as good as ever. Do you know, have you got a time frame of when you think you'll give it up or you're just happy going until you lose it? Because, you know, obviously AFL circles, once you get to sort of 31, 32, it's all these one-year contracts, and as soon as, like, your team's going, it's a bit different in racing, but as soon as you drop off like that, well, then you lose a bit of your speed and then you're sort of gone. Once your body can't get to where your brain expects it to, well, then that's when you're gone at AFL level. Is there something like that in racing, or is it just until you're obviously... You know, the goat, was it just until you've said, oh, listen, I've done enough in racing, I want to go and relax with the family, or...
Yeah, look, it's a good question. I suppose it depends what level you want to do it. I think I don't want to do it at an average level. I still want to do it at a high level. So I feel like I've been on one-year contracts probably the last 3 or 4 years myself.
Yeah.
And I think I'll continue to be that way. The things that keep me going are the desire, the ability to keep at a higher level and the body, I suppose. But the body, as we get older, is a few more aches and pains. But fortunately, the horses do the running for us, so they're taking most of the impact. But I've had quite a few serious injuries over a period of time, and I think they're starting to catch up with me slowly. But I think I'm just taking it a year at a time. But I'm certainly in the home straight. I think somewhere in the next few years will probably see me out.
So with your, you mentioned it, but with your horrendous back injury that you had, when I'm watching it, because I watch it all the time, I can picture you in a race, and it looks like you've adjusted your style accordingly. Are you continuously adjusting because of it and trying to say, well, I know what my body can and can't do, or is it?
Yeah, it's not so much desire. Obviously when I'm 49, I'm not as agile as I was in my 20s and 30s, and with the injuries I've had, I've got 6 vertebrae fused, so I'm not through that T1 to T6 section, so I'm not as
Is that from
flexible.
When you broke your spine?
Yeah, so I fractured T3 and 4, and they fused 6, so the two above... two that I broke and the two below, so that's all fixed through my kind of through my shoulder blades now, so I don't have that flexion through my spine.
Did you think about not coming back?
Absolutely, yeah. Wasn't sure if I was going to be able to.
Yeah.
And two, I thought, do I really want to, you know, that kind of way, but and am I going to be able to? So I was out for about 15 months with that, so I had, you know, these two titanium rods through the 6 vertebrae and 4 screws placed through that part of my spine, and... So that had to stay in there for 12 months. And then I couldn't ride with that in it because one of the screws, kind of as long as my finger, was resting up against my aorta, the main artery to my heart. So if I had a fall with that in there, it was really, really risky. So couldn't ride with that in that. So then they took that out. And then I just felt, well, I did 3 months of sort of full rehab. I was still playing golf and surfing with that in my back, but, you know, couldn't really ride. So once I had that out, I thought, I'll just get myself, do a full rehab, get myself in the best shape, get myself in a position where I'm on the horse, and I'll see how I feel mentally, physically, how I'm up to it. And I thought in that time as well, I thought, well, there's not much else that really kept, you know, and I thought of other things I might want to do, but there was nothing that really grabbed me that I thought, and I was still only 32 at the time, so that's 17 years ago now. So I thought, is there something else I want to do? There was nothing that grabbed me, so... got back on the horse, and you know, I felt like I didn't want to really end my career on that note or on those terms. So, you know, I feel really fulfilled now that I've been able to come back and have the success I have.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And is it a majors part of your in racing? For those who don't follow, it's probably Caulfield, Melbourne Cup, Cox Plate, and Golden Slipper are considered the four majors. Are they probably the number one that you're chasing, or just Group Ones and ongoing success?
I just think competing at a high level, and you know, they're not always in your control, and they're hard to win. You know, probably easier when you're in that prime of your career, sort of that. When I say probably, I think a jockey's prime is probably most, they're probably late 20s to late 30s. You know, that's probably the most successful kind of window. So they're not always in your control. But if you're riding for good stables, obviously, and you know, if you're sort of the number one go-to jockey with like a James McDonald, those sort of, at the moment, those opportunities come along a lot more often for you. So they're not really what drive me. Just competing at a high level probably what drives me. And then you get in a position to, you know, probably contend with those sort of races.
So do you have interest in going back overseas and Ascot and Dubai and things like that? Or you just want to be local
probably
here?
Not much now, because I've got family here. Yeah. I've got 3 kids at school, and probably that's more my priority now. So just getting them through private school and giving them the best opportunity. That
they're
sort
fun,
of
fun, isn't it?
Well, that's what's motivating as much as anything. Yeah.
They in the horses?
No, not really. They can all sit on a sort of trail ride kind of thing, but we live in the city, so they're not really around horses as much. Yeah.
So Dane, picture this, and you win the preliminary final, and they go, righto, 7 days, you can't eat for the rest of the week. Caulfield Cup, you a week before the Caulfield Cup, you went on Delphi. Now, I've obviously, because of the work I do, I actually look at what minimum weights for jockeys are. It's actually a good little tool, because sometimes it gives you, Jesus, he hasn't ridden this light for a while. That can be in a minor race, but yours was well publicised, obviously. Yeah, 54.5 is pretty much your bottom line.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you rode 53.
Yeah.
Is that right? So you had to lose a kilo and a half when you got no fat in you whatsoever. This is the type of thing that everyone's interested in, because I think I skipped lunch about three months ago. Yeah. Talk us through.
It gets away on you, I can tell you.
This is the Saturday. Originally you weren't going to do it, and then you chose to do it. So talk of, so people will be fascinated in this.
It gets worse. I won the Guineas on the Saturday and couldn't even celebrate that. So I had sort of shared a bottle of champagne on Saturday night, and then it was back under the grind of losing weight the next week. So I was probably 57 that week leading up to the Caulfield.
Wow.
So I had to lose like 4 kilos off not much that week. So
how?
Yeah, how do you do
pretty much cut the sugar, cut the salt. As you said, your mind starts playing tricks on you that whole week. So didn't ride my best on the Wednesday. I was sort of, I was a bit flat. But come Saturday,
cause sorry to interrupt, but because you've said it, I wasn't going to say it because I respect you as a friend as well. But you slaughtered one.
My mind was just elsewhere. You know, I was flat as a tack on Wednesday. I think I had 7 or 8 rides, and I was getting withdrawals off the salt and the sugar, and you know, I was struggling.
Yep.
But then I got over the hump, and then come Thursday, Friday, I was feeling better. So yeah, but I did it. You know, and if you've got a carrot dangling there, and I thought, look, I'm getting towards the end of my career. Don't get great rides in a Caulfield Cup come along very often. The horse won really well to start before. Thought, when COVID, what else am I going to do? You know?
And what's the, like, because I was about 54 kilos before having a baby, and then
she always had a six pack.
Oh, yeah.
I've recently had a baby. I have a 12, 13, 14 week old baby, and I'm on this weight loss journey now, which is the first time for me. Is it more what you eat, or do you exercise as well? Because you're a fairly fit person, you have to be fit. So it's like your fitness level would be up here, is my point. You going out and doing a run is not going to move much.
No. So yeah, you already have a pretty high fitness level, as you said. So yeah, I think cutting out the sugar and the salt, and also the fluid intake. So I don't drink much fluid at all, and then I just started walking and jogging a little bit more. And then, yeah.
Saunas and stuff like
that? Yeah, yeah. So I've got a sauna and a bath at home. So, yeah.
Because boxers gets are the other one, aren't they? They have to cut weight quite significantly.
Yeah. UFC, is it?
Yeah, all the, obviously the fighters, professional fighters, yeah. They'll have to cut weight.
Because there was another, like, I mentioned you, but also Hugh Bowman. You would never back him on the day Winks was running in races prior to Winks. His record of favourites was horrendous. And when you're saying it to, like, to you, Swatty, if you said, well, how are you going to train on a Thursday? Who gives a fuck when it's all about the grand final? I mean, that's it's a tough one, isn't it, for riders? Because ultimately you're there for the punter as far as the law of the industry is concerned. So the stewards have to say, well, you have to give this every chance. But equally, if it's Winks or Caulfield Cup, that is still the goal.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, a lot of people don't look at the, you know, all the story behind the story, so to speak, like you're saying. So, you know, I can't exactly say what, you know, what Huey's story was, but obviously losing that weight for that week was, you know, wasn't my best preparation for the races leading up to it. But, you know, when you want to try and get there at your best on the day, so.
And conversely, after winning, and I'll ask you about the Melbourne Cups, obviously, but for a young fellow like Jai McNeil last year wins the Melbourne Cup in front of no one, which that was another story. But he then kept riding through the summer. His stats were horrendous. I stepped back, never said anything publicly, but you just use those to your favour or not. But then about 6 months later, he then spoke about it and said, in hindsight, I should have had a break. Do you think that's something that the relentless nature of racing that they don't probably look at as much as other
possibly,
sports?
Yeah, it's definitely 24/7, night and day, you know, these days. So you have to find that. And a lot of young jockeys are still finding that balance in their life, you know, whether they have a young family or, you know, and they get up early in the mornings too, you know. Like I was up at, you know, 3:30 this morning.
Dane?
And
certainly was. I was the only time up at 3:30 when I'm still up. So.
On the way home.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some guys are getting up that early, riding during the day and then riding at night and then going on limited food intake and fluid intake as well. So, you know, a lot of people don't see that as well. It's quite relentless. Yep.
So after your career one day comes to an end and you've had a long life of crazy up and down weight loss journeys and sleep deprivation, and you go on this big holiday, do you just let it all go? Because we're speaking about this on the other podcast. A lot of footballers, you then see them afterwards and you go, fuck, did you see him? He's got a huge beer gut. Because they've been used to this lifestyle of being so active and watching what they're eating, and all of a sudden you don't have to. Do you think that one day when that comes, you're just going to enjoy a pina colada by the side of the pool and never worry about cutting weight again? Or are you going to be, you know, a fit person for the rest of your life? Is it in your nature now?
Yeah, I like keeping, well, I wouldn't say I like keeping fit, but I like doing activities that do end up keeping you fit. I like game of golf and surfing. They're kind of my pastimes. My son, 11-year-old, likes training football twice a day, so he's keeping me fit. I'm flat out keeping up with him. So their things are probably actually helping me with my riding career. So, but, yeah, I kind of enjoy keeping active, so I can't see myself I'll be heavier than I am now, of course. Yeah. I love having a couple of beers. But, you know, I probably, when I was out from riding, when I had my broken back for 15 months, I probably was 60 to 65 kilos. So probably, you know, around 10 kilos heavier than what I am now.
Whereas another man who's on the podium for the GOAT, Roy Higgins, in the 60s and 70s and 80s, he was more than happy to boast how happy he was being a fat man post-career, wasn't he?
Yeah.
What was he said he was going to be he was going to enjoy being a fat man for the rest of his life.
That's right. Yep.
And he did. He was a great man. Tell us about winning the Melbourne Cups. You've won three. I didn't even do any research on the top man. So talk us about when it comes together at a young age for you, like Doremus.
Yeah, so the first one, I was 23, Doremus. Yeah. That was 95. And I'd ran second in the one the year before. So, that was quite overwhelming, I must say. Life-changing experience. From a kid growing up in WA, you'd think, you know, to ride in a Melbourne Cup would be great first, and then to win it's pretty amazing. And it opens a lot of doors for you in your career, whether that be able to ride overseas and even opportunities here in Australia. Once you've won a Melbourne Cup, you could win every other big race on the calendar and not be known to sort of people outside of racing. But once you win that race, and you're walking down the straight and you hear people say, oh, that's the guy who won the Melbourne Cup kind of thing, you know. So it does makes you more recognisable and certainly opens a lot of opportunities for you.
So the best race, is it the one you want to win out of all the races in the world? Is that the one?
I think for an Australian jockey, probably I'd say yeah, for sure. I mean, it may be not the best race, but it's the most famous race. You know, the Cox Plate's probably known as the
best horses.
The best horses, yeah.
And did you know getting on that horse, you were a bit younger in your career, did you know getting on that horse you were a fair chance to take it out that
day? I did, actually, yeah. He'd won the Caulfield Cup and was, I think he was close to favourite for that race. So, yeah, it was...
tingle in your toes for that one.
Yeah, it was really exciting. Yeah,
all the celebrations.
Oh, big, yeah. I remember getting picked up in a helicopter in the middle of Flemington Track and they flew us into a current affair and they had a live cross with my mum and my grandmother in Perth and then they give us a car for the rest of the night and we went back to Flemington and the party was still going there and in the birdcage and we partied on there till night and then back into town. It was a big night, yeah.
And so to mix up with Swanee Sport, Kevin Sheedy's got a theory about always playing young kids in premierships and in grand finals because they've got no fear and probably Melbourne knew that young Bowie was probably a good example. You know, you need those types. At that age, are you riding fearless and that actually can mean you can do some amazing things?
Yeah, probably. I think you're a little bit more fearless when you're younger.
Yeah.
But the advantage of getting older too, you can see the mistakes that the kids might be making, you know, before they make it, whereas... so you can see things clear and before they happen as you get older too. So, you know, there's plus and advantages for both sides of it for sure.
What about looking after your body at that age? Because that's when I first met you. And growing up as a kid at Caulfield, I was a strapper, and at that stage jockeys would not eat, have about 3 packets of smokes a day and then, you know, stay in the sauna for 20 hours. But to my... I could be wrong, but you're one of the first to treat yourself as a real athlete and go about it, both diet but also stretching and all those other things. Is that have I got my memory right?
Yeah. Look, I think diets are...
And you were never a smoker, were you?
No, I've never been a smoker, no. You know, I have had my fair few drinks over the years.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of, yeah, got to find that balance with it. But, I think... sports around everywhere have got a lot smarter with, you know, diet and stretching and preparation and all that sort of thing. So I think most sportsmen's careers have been able to get longer over a period of time. So it certainly helped me, especially with the injuries I've had as well. I think it's a big part of it.
When did it turn professional? Jockey always been professional?
You know, pretty much, yeah, because it's kind of been... It's 24/7 sort of sport. Yeah. Well, the racing wasn't 24/7. I mean, I used to race when I first started probably 3 or 4 days a week. Now it's sort of 7, 8 days a week with 9 days a week with night racing too. So, but as far as I know, it's always been full on, yeah.
Away from the controversy of Jamie Carr, but the great stuff about Jamie Carr is I think she changed people's perception forever of that if you're good enough as a female, you were good enough to make it in racing. I just sort of see that angle because obviously Michelle Payne was the breakthrough, but Jamie Carr, I think, just took it to a new level.
Yeah, I think it's been coming for a while. As I said, there's certainly more more females riding now. The percentage is obviously higher, I think, than it ever has been, and it's going to continue to grow. And I think the racing's changed now. We have padded whips, so the strength is not such a key component of it. And also, I think you can't use the whip as much as you could either. So the horsemanship, is rather than strength, is coming into it more and more. And these girls, you know, like you talk about Michelle, Jamie, and there's a number of other young ones coming through as well. They're actually real horse people. So they actually, you know, they've ridden horses from a young age. They have a great rapport and understanding with the horse. So they know how to get the best out of a horse. So it's not just a matter of strength. And we're all carrying the same weight, well, relatively anyway. Yep. So the strength is not such a big component of it. It's actually getting on with your horse and getting inside your horse's head or getting to know your horse and getting the best out of your horse to get the best result.
So is that a bit like when Dane... you laugh generally at this time of year about the bloke who's just won the 3K time trial but he can't get a kick come finals time, that actually the real horsemen are the people who have grown up with it. They've got that innate, in footy sense, or horse sense. Is that a similar situation?
Oh, I suppose it is, yeah. Look, I suppose you could be, you know, not all the smallest, always the smallest, lightest jockeys are the best jockeys. You see some of the tallest... and the ones that do it the hardest in the sauna, you know, whether they got to work a bit harder for it, or you know, it's they come all shapes and sizes, the jockeys as well, and all different talents as well. They have all different strengths and weaknesses as well too.
And so how long – sorry to interrupt there. No. So how long before you ride do you meet a horse? Because you say it's the way you work with the horse, but I'm gathering you wouldn't have all that long to meet your horse before you ride.
Yes, often you're on them for the first time when you sit on them in a race. It is an advantage if you've sat on them before, but you have that sort of few minutes on them getting around to the start just to feel their little idiosyncrasies. Or and you watch videos of them as well to see how they like to race, that kind of way. So, yeah, there's different ways of looking at it. Yep.
You mentioned the padded whip. Can you explain to people who think whipping horses is cruel? It's a padded whip. It's noise, isn't it? I mean,
it still stings a little bit, but it doesn't mark them as such. And there's a number of times you're only allowed to hit them. I think it's 5 times before the 100-meter mark, and then I think it's about 10 times in total after that. So. There's a restriction on how many times you can hit them. And, you know, some horses respond well to it, others don't. And it's a jockey's job to see how they respond best, whether they respond better to the whip. Some are lazy horses, some need it. Some don't like it. They actually curl up on it and you can feel that when you're riding them. If they're not responding to it, you have to put it away to get the best out of them.
Is it a huge difference to when you started what the whip actually was, because I think it was Cowboy City, wasn't it?
It was like leather flaps on the end. Now they're sort of padded, and you know, it was like a whalebone fiberglass type of thing. And it was actually, you know, it was designed to inflict pain to get the best out of them. Whereas now it's changed so much, and I think it's changed for the better.
Did it make them run faster back then or now, or is it?
You know, much the same. I think, you know, I find after you hit most horses a certain amount of times, they resent it. You know, it's usually the first 2 or 3 times that you hit them, you get that element of surprise and you get that response from them. So, yeah, I think it has changed for the better, for sure.
And good horses actually want to run fast, don't they?
Yep.
What do you sense about riding a great horse?
A lot of the good horses don't need it, actually, to get the best out of them.
Do you have a best horse that you've ridden?
Yeah, I've got quite a few. It's hard to name one. But, yeah, a lot of good ones over the years, yeah.
Northerly?
Yeah, he was a strange good horse because he didn't... Most good horses give you a good feel. They got a great action, great attitude. He used to carry his head up high and he was kind of lazy and he'd lay into one side. You know, but he had a... I wouldn't say an extraordinary real will to win because I don't know if horses really have that, but he could go... faster for longer, and he'd never lie down for you. He'd just keep finding for you. You know, it's just a good quality to have in a horse.
Be your type of horse, and it's funny, not the best action. Gets it done. Dane's not on LinkedIn. You're not on Twitter. You'd be keen for people who live in a bin to tell you what you do wrong in life and things like that.
No, not really enough time for that. No.
How do you see some of the young fellas who get it, non-gender specific, but they get immersed in social media? I think the dumbest thing in the world for a jockey would be to be immersed in it.
I would think so, yeah. I'm sure it has a few ups, but there'd be more downs to it than ups, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless you've got 100% winning success strike rate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
Once again, plenty of advice, I'm sure.
Yeah. I saw a video last year when Russian Camelot ran a place in the Cox Plate. One of the owners was sending it round, and you got a bit emotional afterwards. What it means to you when you've not just the horses pushed themselves to the limit, but you have as well.
Yeah, I suppose those big races like that, when you think as you're getting older, you probably haven't got many more chances to win them. So I thought he was a great chance of winning it. And we drew the outside gate, which didn't help our chances. And then, you know, we had a great run but just fell short. So, yeah, I was a bit emotional that day. Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, that's the difference there. People go, yeah, beauty. It means he cares.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I think the day you stop caring about it, especially big occasions like that, you probably shouldn't be doing it, you know, because if you don't care, if it doesn't mean anything to you, then you're not going to get the best out of yourself or the best result for anyone you're working with, yeah.
And just finish, what's the health of the sport? How do you see it?
I think it's pretty healthy. The turnover figures have been extraordinary since COVID's been on. But I think it's really important that we re-engage with the racing fans or owners and all that to really capitalise on this growth that we've had when people have been stuck at home probably watching racing and betting a bit more. So, you know, one thing I think it's really expensive to to be in horse ownership, but I think we've got to keep finding a way to get people into it. And with syndication, that's a really good way to keep people involved these days. And I think people will be really keen to get back on track, and I think it's really important to capitalise on that and capture that growth that we've had to get people back on track and get people back out living some sort of normal life.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you've always been really open, and it's very nice of you to do this for us. But also about that fan engagement, how do you see the balance there? Because obviously on race day, you're there for a job, but equally what's unique about your sport is 40 minutes, sometimes an hour and a half between engagements.
Yeah, I think on a Saturday I understand the 40 minutes between races because it's such a chock-full program, if you like, with interstate and all that. But I think 30 minutes is a good time, shorter races. And I think personally 10, you know, for the big meets, I understand 10 races is okay, you know, but I think shorter, you know, like, you know, that 2020 style.
I was more sort of referring to your great rival Craig Williams who'll go out and do 700 interviews and talk to people.
Sorry. I'll leave that to Willow. Not really my area, mate. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mate, appreciate you coming in. Really good.
No worries.
Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.